So you're going to want to have this book, as I said, and you're going to, before your session begins, there's a whole long section, the first 20 pages or so isn't even getting to this first session. You got to flip to page 33 before you actually get into that first session. I'm not going to go through all that first, 30 pages of material. I trust you to do that as the leader of your group. And that's all trying to explain to you a little bit of the ebb and the flow of how it's going to go. We don't expect this to be overly rigid in your particular group. We expect it to have some differences depending on the makeup of people who are there, whether you have younger people or older people and time frames that you have and meeting. Also, you'll notice in this, the way they've designed this in the introduction here, when you look at the table of contents, you'll see there are seven sessions. But the sixth session is called what they call the day away. It's kind of like a little retreat. This is designed as a series to be what you would walk through with a friend, neighbor, coworker, something like that, that is unfamiliar with the Bible. Or somebody who is very much a baby Christian. Or somebody who has maybe been, and typically when we think baby Christian, we think of somebody who just got saved. But there's a lot of Christian people who have a basic knowledge of God, and then they've never really gone anywhere. And so this would also fit that particular niche as well. This is meant to get them to read the Gospel of Mark and for you to go through it with them as a group, as a small group. Our hope is that when we do this at church, September and October, or not September and October, September through whenever we quit in May, that you will feel confident and educated on how to do this. And hopefully, maybe somewhere along the way, you're inviting a neighbor, friend, coworker to come into this. It would be ideal if you get them in on the first session. That would be the best way to go at it. At the same time, that may or may not happen. This first run of it is mainly to get our small groups educated in this process, and then hopefully what we have is a expanding web of efforts within our church of our people trying to carry this process out further. So Dan teaches his group, his small group, going through this. They feel comfortable with it. Then who's in your small group? Just one of the other families.
Marvin, Tim Woodson.
Okay, so Tim Woodson then, as a friend he works with or two, and he's able in his neighborhood, and he's able to get them to come, and then Tim is the one teaching this. Does that make sense? So we're trying to start it here, then you take it to this next level, and then it disseminates further out. We want our church, of course, to be an evangelistic church that's making concerted efforts to try and reach people. And sometimes we don't know exactly how to go at that. Sometimes we don't know what the best way is. Give them a track. Well, that's one thing. Talk to them, just give them the gospel. That's another way. But one of the most powerful ways, I think, is to actually get them to read a section of the Bible, to read a book of the Bible. And hopefully that is produces a lot more result as far as becoming familiar with who God is, who Christ is. So flip over to page 33 at this point. In this leader handbook, you find it'll say, for example, welcome the guest to Christianity Explored, introduce yourself, all that kind of stuff. That's the stuff that, I'm going to trust you to read that part to get an idea of a bit of the process they're trying to do. They're trying to hold your hand through it. Many of you know how to do this intuitively. You're good hosts and hostesses. You know that you ought to welcome people and that kind of thing. But this is trying to give you a nice, somewhat of a formalized way to understand it and to go from there. It says, explain the, this is page 34, it says explain the four sections of the handbook, which is to explore, which is read the Bible together and talk about what we've read. Now, session one, see here, it says different session one. They haven't read anything yet, and so you're not going to have any of that background material to be able to go through. Every session after that, though, there ought to be a little bit of a review. Okay, so you read Mark chapter 1 through chapter 3, verse 6 last time, and then it gives you some questions to ask regarding that. I'm not one that sticks I'm not a stickler for sticking to the script of those kinds of things. If you find a question that of the five that really somebody connects with, one of the people in your group connects with, there's no problem with spending more time on that and skipping another question later, that kind of thing. I think there's flexibility in that as this this material allows you to. Then the next one is listen. We listen to the Bible talk or watch the video. So again, you don't have to use the video. You might find in your group that it breaks up some of the flow of it. I used it with the teenagers for several weeks, and it seemed to work really well, though. It's not corny. It's not off this subject at all. It's well done, as you'll see here in a minute. So listen to or watch the video. Make notes in the talk outline in the handbook, which you'll see here in a moment. And then discuss. You do a follow-up to that video. And then there is the follow-up. You read some of Mark yourself and then bring any questions you have to the group. So pretty straightforward, really. Not too difficult to get into. Now, this first session, as I said, I don't know how good you are at icebreakers. Icebreakers are not the easiest thing. All the years I've spent working with high school and junior high kids, even college people, trying to do an icebreaker, a little bit awkward. Chubby bunny with a group of grown people might be a little weird. Maybe not. Depends on your group, you know. Depends on your squad. But most likely in this setting, these aren't people that you know really well. It's not going to be like Kurt's small group where they've been in the same group for 4 years or something like that, where they're comfortable.
North Korea small
groups. You know it. So most likely this won't be quite like that. So some of the suggestions here obviously are could be useful to you. I would encourage you with your leader book, as you're thinking about this, you and your co-leader maybe discuss what do you think is actually a good question to ask here. I did this with the high school when we went through this a little bit. Like, what do you think of that question? And sometimes the questions are kind of rhetorical. And as a teacher, you know that asking rhetorical questions is not beneficial. They just nod or, you know, something. It doesn't get you much of anywhere. So I would encourage you, if the question comes off as rhetorical as you're going through it, maybe with your spouse or co-leader or whatever, that you consider how to reword it. Otherwise, you get a lot of just people staring at you like you are with me now or like the cows from the illustration this morning. So a couple of the questions that are asked here, you know, kind of the basics of what's your name and what's an adjective that describes you kind of stuff. You know, those things are, there's not really any easy way to go through those really, I don't think. But then he says, what's the best news you've ever heard? Now, that's the lead-in question to the video, really. So his whole thing here is to ask. So let me throw that out. What is the best news you've ever heard? You were worried about a boy, huh? You're worried about the Lord's revenge on your, yes. Anybody else? Remember, you're the small group leader, so you're supposed to be, you know, Johnny on the spot with this stuff, so don't be shy. Best news you've ever heard. Mike. Yeah.
Well, my question is, if you have a Christian audience and they think that somebody goes there, there's nothing else to say. I mean, that isn't good news.
Yeah, but you can really branch off from that, right?
Well, you could.
So if me and you were in a small group, Mike, and I asked that question and the rest of our people just, you know, stare at us or say some random thing, and then you say gospel, it's kind of like the trump card being, whoosh, you know, slapped down. So that would be kind of a thing that you might educate your own group. Don't answer the questions for them. It's the same thing I tell people that help out with the youth group. If it's a Wednesday night and you're an adult in the room, hesitate answering. You know, try to let a junior high or a high schooler say something first. Now, if everybody's just staring, you know, for a long time and I reword the question and still nothing, then I, you know, Kurt knows that. He's been, and Jared have been in the room with me forever. And so they know. I would say either you tell the people in your group, hey, don't answer right away. Or now we talk. Why is that such great news, though, Mike? You know, that kind of thing. And then you say something, and I go, yeah, but for a lot of people, they don't understand. Why would that be great news to them? You know, so you got to be able to think on your feet a little bit there, because more than likely someone is going to say, it's somebody's going to give you a Sunday school answer. You know, Jesus. And then you're like, okay, that ended the conversation. You know, so you got to be able to move from there. Sorry, Dan.
You just have to be careful how to ask the question, because if you have somebody that's taking over every question, I ask the question, if you're the one taking over, I turn over here and I intentionally ignore you. Or I say, thank you, Brian. Anybody else? And so you just have to, and sometimes if you can't get somebody to go, find somebody that's hesitating to answer, but you almost see that they want to.
Yeah. And this is why it would be good in a small group setting. Because if it's just us right here, and I say, well, what do you think, Cameron? That's different than being in this room, right? With a room full of people, and you're like, so, Cameron, it's like, whoa. You kind of put them on the spot in a way maybe they're very uncomfortable with. But if it's just in your living room, you know, and there's five of you, and group dynamics, as you know, change dramatically based upon that size. And once you get out to a large group of more than 12, it changed. It dramatically changed. And I think that the smaller, like if you're around five, there's a certain fluidity of conversation that tends to happen. Whereas the bigger it gets and the more you mix ages and all that stuff, it does tend to shut people up. And so you might consider that as you gather people.
Well, the other thing too is, I mean, this technically is evangelistic.
Yes.
So, you know, eventually when you're going through this with an unbeliever, they're obviously not going to answer the question with, oh, the good news of Jesus Christ, that's the best thing
right.
for her.
Right.
You know, so it's
otherwise, yeah.
towards that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Jim.
I was just thinking too, like, from the unbeliever perspective, we don't want to or need to diminish anyone answering this in some of the gifts.
Yeah.
Like, those aren't good things that happen to people's lives. So we're wanting to think that a little deeper thing.
Right.
Those are good things. So, you know, someone said yes to marry you, or, you know, those are good. Those
right.
are good things.
And sometimes we, as Christians, answer that question like that too, because we're not thinking on that level yet. Like, oh yeah, duh. Of course.
Or you don't want to be the Sunday school answer guy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's true. And again, you can ask this question. You can consider how to ask that maybe in a different way. Like Dan was saying, if you have somebody that does tend to take over, that's never easy. You guys have been in there on Wednesday night with my dad, probably, how he gives people their, you got two. You can answer twice, you know, or something like that. So, I mean, you come up with your own way of trying to negotiate that issue, but that's not always easy. Tavis, if you would. Yeah.
You may also come up with one that's not gospel related for yourself. So you start it.
Yes.
You're the leader, started saying, I remember when, and some exciting thing that happened.
Yeah. Like Jared said, it's a girl, right?
And so you as a leader ask the question already saying something that's not spiritually related.
Good. Good. Let's watch this video, and this will give you a good idea of. So you go from asking some basic kind of exploratory type questions, and then you try to hop into this video if you would like. I probably would. I think you'll find it to be useful, Tavis. I would turn off the other lights, but some would fall asleep. Can you see? Can you see? This guy has a lovely accent too, so it's fun.
The most beautiful sight you've ever seen. For me, it was probably right up Cape Town, 3,000 feet below. It was so stunning, we lost all track of our conversation and just stood there in silence. What would it be for you? And when you saw what you saw, I wonder if you asked yourself the same questions I did. What kind of power could have produced something so achingly beautiful that it reduces a human being to sheer, wordless wonder? Did all this beauty really just happen by chance? How did life begin without life to create it in the first place? And even if I do decide it all happened completely by chance, why is there anything here at all? Why is there something and not nothing? Then there are the stars, millions of miles above us. Apparently, there are at least 100 billion stars in our galaxy alone. And scientists estimate there are at least 100 billion galaxies in the universe. And it's not just the larger things in life that are truly remarkable. It's the smaller things too. There are 75,000 miles of blood vessels crammed inside us and at least 50 trillion cells. If the DNA from a single human cell was stretched out, it would measure about 6 feet in length. So if all the DNA contained within the cells of a single human being was stretched out and laid end to end, it would reach all the way to the moon and back again 8,000 times. You're amazing. And if you saw something that stunning in a gallery or heard something that beautiful on the radio, you'd instinctively ask, who created it? And if someone were to tell you that this incredible piece of art or music just came together by itself, without any author to create it, would you believe them? The Bible quite unashamedly says that all this natural beauty is meant to point us towards God, the one who created the extraordinary scale and complexity of the universe we live in and the bodies we inhabit. But as a younger man, I had a real problem with all that. Although my experience of the universe was that it really was extraordinary, Christianity definitely was not. First of all, it was incredibly dull. I used to go to church about once a month, and when I did, I just sat there counting the number of bricks up the wall. Secondly, I couldn't see what it had to do with me. I couldn't relate to the religious people I met, and I couldn't see the point of reading a book written 2,000 years ago and 2,000 miles away. I thought it was a bunch of rules telling me how to live my life, and actually, my life was pretty good, so I didn't need any of them. Then thirdly, and most importantly, I just thought it wasn't true. I didn't have a problem with Christmas, and as you can probably guess, I had no problem with Christmas stuffing. But Christianity itself was make-believe. I never mistook it for the real world. But then my brother did something that started to change the way I thought about Christianity. He opened a Bible and showed me the very first sentence of a book called Mark. It says this, the beginning of the gospel about Jesus Christ. He said to me, Rico, you just don't understand what Christianity is about. You think it's all about churches and rules and leaving your brain at the grave and having all your fun spoiled. But, he said to me, that's not what it's about. The first sentence of Mark says that Christianity is about Christ. He explained that the word Christ isn't Jesus' second name. It's a title, like president or prime minister. And it means God's only chosen king. And Christ was an extremely dangerous word for Mark to use here, because at the time he was writing, Roman emperors were said to have divine authority. To speak of Jesus as God's only true representative on earth was the kind of thing that got you thrown into the Colosseum to be torn apart by wild animals. Mark's claim that Jesus is the Christ, God's only chosen king, is just as controversial today. I wonder what you make of it. Then my brother pointed me back to the first sentence in Mark, the beginning of the gospel about Jesus Christ. He said, Rico, not only is Christianity about Jesus Christ, it's the gospel about Jesus Christ. The word gospel literally means good news, but that doesn't really do it justice. It's more like the announcement that the war is finally over. It's the kind of news that makes people dance in the streets and hug complete strangers. It's that good. So one thing I'd like to say as we start to explore Mark together is this. When you hear what you're about to hear, if you don't think it's the best news you've ever heard, you can be absolutely certain you've not understood it. And it would be so easy to miss. Have you ever had the experience of walking down the main street of a city and being offered a leaflet? You ignore it, or take it and then ignore it, because you don't think it will do you any good. Well, there was an experiment conducted by a London newspaper. They got a man to stand just here, outside Oxford Circus tube station, offering people a leaflet. On the leaflet was the free offer of £5. All you had to do was bring the leaflet back to the man, and he would hand you the cash right there on the spot. 3/4 of people passed him. And in 3 hours, only 11 people came back for the money. They thought they already knew what he was handing out, but it wouldn't do them any good. So they either didn't bother to take it, they didn't bother to read it, or if they did read it, they simply refused to believe it. Please don't make the same mistake with Mark's gospel. Make time to pick it up and read it. Take a look at what Mark has to say about Jesus. And as you do that, I hope you'll begin to see why Mark describes Jesus as good news. No one knows exactly when Mark wrote his gospel, but it was most likely between 45 and 60 AD, within about 20 years of Jesus' death. Mark was being guided by one of Jesus' closest followers, Peter, a man who was an actual eyewitness of the remarkable events that occurred. And they were remarkable events. Right from the beginning of Mark's gospel, strange things start to happen, supernatural things. At that time, Jesus came from Nazareth in Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. As Jesus was coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove, and a voice came from heaven. You are my Son, whom I love. With you, I am well pleased. Heaven gets torn open, the Holy Spirit comes down on Jesus, and God the Father announces, you are my Son. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, this is just flat out weird, you're not the only one. Mark tells us that people thought exactly the same thing 2,000 years ago, including Jesus' closest followers. But maybe they should have expected it. Early in Mark's gospel, we read a 700-year-old prediction that someone called the Lord was on his way. In other words, get ready. God is coming to meet you. The prediction also says that a messenger in the desert will tell people that the Lord is coming. That messenger, according to Mark chapter 1, was a man called John the Baptist. Mark tells us that the whole Judean countryside and all the people of Jerusalem went out to him. They flocked to him, because if God was coming, they knew they needed to be ready. They knew from their own experience they were not the people they wanted to be, let alone the people God wanted them to be. So John offers them baptism with water as a sign of being washed clean, of being forgiven. When the person was lowered into the water, it was a symbol of dying to the old self. And when they were lifted out of the water, it was a symbol of being raised to new life. But John knows that when the Lord himself comes, he will offer them, and us, so much more. After me will come one more powerful than I, the thongs of whose sandals I am not worthy to stoop down and untie. I baptize you with water, but he will baptize you with the Holy Spirit. What John is saying is absolutely stunning. He's claiming that Jesus Christ will not only offer complete forgiveness to all those who put their trust in him, he will also fill those people with God's Holy Spirit, who will radically transform their lives. To those who know they are not the people they want to be, let alone the people God wants them to be, this is the best, the most remarkable news in the world. But is it true? It's certainly true that what Mark reports isn't the kind of thing people normally experience. And if Jesus is just an ordinary man, then what we read here is simply not believable. But if, as Mark claims, Jesus is much more than that, then it shouldn't surprise us that extraordinary things are starting to happen. And that is the beginning of the good news that Mark has for us. God has actually revealed himself to us in human history through Jesus Christ. When we look at Jesus, all the guessing games about God stop. The good news, according to Mark, is that Jesus really is the Christ, God's only chosen King. But Mark is just getting started.
All right, so if you open in your book to page 36, you'll find you're now, obviously, to ask some follow-up questions. So just what's your response to that after watching that? What's your thoughts? Let's see if I hit the right one. Yes! Yeah. I like that his name is Tico Rico, or Rico Tico. It's a fun name.
He's got a good accent.
Yeah, he does. He's easy to listen to on that front. Yeah.
You can relate to people and the things that they know are true. They can see the mountains, the creation.
Yep.
We both can see that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can begin to relate to them through those things.
Good.
And show that there is really a God out there. Look at that and see if that could really happen.
Right.
Themselves.
And that is one of the springboard questions here that you might get into, especially with somebody who doesn't know the Lord, you know, at all, is that they might go into that subject. And that's up to you how long you want to let that go and how long you want to keep going down that particular thing. Because you could get into a whole apologetic angle if you allow it to. And that's fine. You might say to somebody, though, who's going that way and you don't have time for it, like, can you and I talk about that, like, once we're done? I'll stay up and talk to you about it all night, you know, but if that's not where they are.
I was expecting him to start off with that question. But he didn't exactly state the question until he came to the answer,
right,
to the final answer.
Yeah.
He
that's the projector, not a bomb.
Yeah, he moved into it. He moved into that with other things. He started out by the spectacular view that he saw,
yeah,
when he climbed up on top of that mountain and kind of moved that way.
Right.
So, you know, that makes me think, you know, we need to not necessarily, like you say, stick to the script.
Not exactly. Right.
When you ask that question, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, besides the gospel, what would be the...
Yeah, the part about gospel itself didn't come until about midway through that, when he talked about the, you know, the essence of what the word means and all that kind of stuff, right?
So I think he moved into that.
Yes.
Why the gospel
is such good news.
Essentially, why the gospel is better news than anything you've ever heard before.
Right.
But
I like the fact that he worked his personal testimony.
Yep.
Into that, which from a person like myself that have a lot of these, you know, former experiences without Christ, that showed that he wasn't a preacher.
Yep.
Trying to communicate a message.
He was certainly sympathetic from the position of somebody who didn't know the Lord. Yeah, it's good. Dan?
I like that he was so approachable.
Yeah.
He was saying the thing that those that are coming to our group would be afraid to say.
Yes.
Counting the bricks on the wall. And
yeah.
It was just something that just made us realize this guy wouldn't be born liking the Bible.
Right.
We don't. And that the question of, do you really understand it,
mm-hmm,
caused him to begin searching.
And acknowledging some of those things. I mean, I don't know how many times I've done that. You know, where I've noticed how many light bulbs are in a room kind of thing. And, some, you know, it's fair. It's even helpful to sometimes say that and to say how bizarre this does feel. I know for me as a new convert, one of the weirdest things on the planet was church picnics. I didn't know what to do with myself. You know, I was 21 and everybody's sitting around eating and talking about stuff and nobody's drinking anything. No liquid courage. No alcohol was involved. And I just kind of stood there like, what do I do? You know, and then I was just like, well, the two people that are my age aren't here, so I'm leaving. You know, and so acknowledging that, yeah, this isn't your normal setting or world or whatever can be helpful to people that have never been in that room and never... Because these are topics that a lot of people just flat out avoid. Jesus, I mean, come on. If you want to shut down any conversation, just say mention Jesus and they're gone, you know. Jared?
I think just how he highlighted the word gospel.
Yes.
And that, you know, it's like the common word, even to probably unbelievers, but to say that, you know, there's a war going on, and it's a declaration of the good news that the war is won. So it's people thinking like, wait,
yeah,
what war? What are you talking about?
Good.
Which gives them salvation.
Yeah, Kurt?
Despite his approachability and all that stuff, he also grew a strong, you know, say that if you don't find this the best news you've ever heard, then you're not
yeah, afraid. That's a great line, isn't it? You can be absolutely certain that you didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good point. He didn't pull back. He was bold. Jared.
To me, it seems like it's to get this discussion.
Yes.
And it really opens up. It's the same thing Dan was talking about. It's a comfortability. That's what we can ask this question.
Yes.
We can ask
Right. Which is exactly why I said I wouldn't be too slavish in sticking to the script. Because if your group is asking, or, you know, you just say, well, what were your thoughts? Like, I didn't use the introductory questions that they said. I just said, what are your thoughts? And you guys had no problem. Now, this is a different group, maybe. Maybe we have more, you know, people that are likely to talk. You guys are the leaders, after all. At the same time, if they've got thoughts and they're already going, I personally would say run with that. Don't be too worried, well, we got to ask the next question. You know, because that can kill that kind of organic option that's going on. And that's my personal way, of course, of teaching, if you will. But Jim?
I would think objectively you may get a thought on this first video from someone to say, you know, I just can't agree that you know, this was created by someone. You know, all of my background
right.
can tell me that you know, this came from an evolutionary process.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. That's what I was saying earlier. I don't know how much you want to get into that. Maybe you felt that out before you even started. But I think if it's somebody who's in that room, maybe they won't bring that real strongly. But I would say, would you be willing to consider that that is what's happened? You know? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Because I would say, yeah, evolution actually doesn't tell you anything about origins.
Yeah, I've been down that
right. Yeah. Evolution just talks about material that's already in existence and now it's being modified along the way. It tells you nothing about origins, you know. And so that would be one way to go at it. And I think he tried to with his initial argument from design and all of that.
And then instead of getting into the argument, though, that's going to take away from the gospel.
Yes.
Can you really look at that and say that it doesn't look like there's a design?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you can leave it open-ended without, because if you go too much at the evolution one here, you may end up pushing people out that won't come back.
Yes.
And so eventually you're going to get there.
Yes.
You get to it, you're just saying, at least can you acknowledge that it looks like
yeah.
a designer?
Sure. And that, and even...
From that, and the Bible presents it as that designer is this.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see.
Atheistic philosophers even say that. You know, they even admit this world looks like it's been designed, and they have to remind themselves that it's not, you know. So you're not outside the realm of philosophical argumentation to say, look, even atheistic, you know, people that want to demote all of this have to say, I mean, how do you even look at a flower and not see that, you know, on a human eye?
That the guy was somewhat ugly.
Yeah.
Because
he wasn't beautiful. Yeah.
You
okay.
You want to put out this most perfect thing.
Yeah.
He's just a normal guy. Like
yeah.
Us. And I found that couple.
What'd you say? Yeah, he wasn't exactly mountain climbing, was he? Yeah. Yeah, he's approachable in that sense. He wasn't one of the beautiful people, if you will. It wasn't an overly polished up thing, if you will. Right?
Well, from what Dan is saying, that you find some common ground.
Yeah.
And you go from there.
Yeah.
I think the Apostle Paul did that after he found some common ground. He was able to take that and lead to the gospel.
Yeah. There. Yes, exactly. Which is what we're trying to do, right, in this effort. Dan?
I think according to what
are you mad that he said ugly? Is that
no,
is,
I mean,
we're gonna argue?
There.
Yeah. Speak for yourself.
if somebody's vehement enough about evolution, you may want to say
yeah, exactly.
Might want to divert completely.
Yes, I think so too. I think it depends on the spirit of the individual and how feisty they are on that topic because, yeah, that can veer quickly. Some of the questions here, though, that we have in this book that are follow-up to that if you don't have material or you don't have questions that are coming organically, people are just looking at you. One of them here is a question I think we... Even all of us, we've grown up knowing Christ through the years of being a believer. I've been a believer about 20 years, actually exactly 20 years, and I'm still intrigued by Christ. So this first question, he says, is there anything that intrigues you or puzzles you about Jesus? So for you, old Christians, if you will, what is there that still intrigues you or is puzzling to you about Jesus? Yeah.
That he never explained himself.
How do you mean?
He'd say things like, eat my body and drink my blood.
Yeah.
And he didn't say this means that it's a symbol and go through all the explanations that we do for them.
There are times when he just throws the grenade in the room and shuts the door.
He does.
Right? And just walks away from it.
I wonder, what did he mean?
Yeah. Good. He's an intriguing individual by intent.
I think his humanity is always just put.
Yeah.
The fact that here's God in heaven, perfectly content with himself, and being willing to humble himself to come in a body as a man and dwell among us.
Yeah.
How are you going to pray?
Now, those are kind of questions, or responses to that question, rather, that people like us are going to make. But if you are trying to rewind in your mind, or when you've been around people that just have a very basic knowledge of these things, what kind of responses do you think they might give you when you ask a question like, is there anything that intrigues you or puzzles you about Jesus? Jim?
Like Christianity claims a virgin birth.
Yes.
Yeah, how could that
be? Yes, good. Yeah. Resurrection. Come on. All right. Good. Anybody else? Yeah. Good. I think that would be a common one. Like, you say he's God, but he seems very man.
Miracles.
Yeah.
I've never seen one.
Right. Walking on water. Really? Right. Was it just magic, as some have tried to present, or something like that? I, with the youth group in there the other day, they said something like, did he have blue eyes? Because you remember, we're thinking a lot of times in a really deep level, because you are deep people by nature as Christians, and especially as older Christians, and you might get some really kind of goofy questions like, did he really have long hair like they present him in the movies? Was he like a, you know, is that the kind of idea? Was he this, that, and the other? And it's a lot of times it's real superficial things because they're not there on that depth. They're not pondering, you know, the nature of God and man like we are. They might if they're thoughtful, but most, I don't think, are a lot of them, it might be kind of superficial responses. And you might have somebody else in the room with you who would be like a plant, you know, like if I'm teaching this group, I might have Priscilla in there with me, and Priscilla's going to naturally go to a deeper response to it, like something that intrigues you, rather than, does he really have hippie hair? You know, something like that.
You just should expect superficial.
Yes, you should.
That's probably what's going to happen. And that's when I deal with, when I look at my evangelism past, and I tell the people, that's usually what initially what you get.
Yep.
Superficial response.
Good.
And the other one is, how do you know that the book that we're studying is historically accurate?
Yeah.
And how can I trust it? And how do you know it's 2,000 years old? How do you know it's been corrupted by? And I have, personally, I just like a good website to refer them to. I mean, I don't feel equipped to answer those kind of questions.
Yeah.
I do know that there's good information.
Yes.
On how the Bible came to us.
At the same time, when somebody veers a little too far off the question, it's okay to say, well, that's a good question or a good point, but that's not really answering the question. The question was regarding, you know, what's intriguing about Jesus? You know, what's puzzling about him? So it's okay to refer back to that.
Well, yeah. Willing to say, well, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to look for something and make sure you come back.
Yes.
For them, whether personally or in the group.
Which is addressed on the next page, 38, when it's talking about follow-up. And that's how you would begin the next session, is covering what it covers here in the follow-up, which they're supposed to read Mark chapter 1 through chapter 3, verse 6. And I would be somewhat prepared to have at least a few of those people who didn't do the homework at all. When I did this, like I said, with the high school kids, not a one of them had read it. You know, not a one of them had gone back to it. Well, I also didn't give them these red books. That's kind of giving them a little bit of a workbook to fill out and all of that, you know.
Yeah, don't claim to be the expert or the know-it-all. You can back yourself in a corner in a hurry.
Yeah.
If you don't know something, say you'll find out and get back to them and tell it.
That's good. So some of the other questions here, this one, of course, I don't know how useful this one is, but question two, that for me, I don't know how to make this exactly work, but this is, maybe you're better with that particular thing, but it says, how do you feel about reading Mark's gospel? personally, I think if I've invited somebody over, I probably already asked them, hey, we're going to read the Gospel of Mark. Now you're just doing a follow-up to that question. What, you know, after watching this video, maybe that'd be a way to start. How do you feel about reading the Gospel of Mark? Are you intrigued by that proposition here at all? The other adult teachers didn't behave. They let everybody out early. That's a temptation on top of the donut box in the trash. I'm sorry. Third question, if you could ask God one question. This was one that we're, I mean, this one could go on for a long time. And it did with the high school. If you could ask God one question and you knew it would be answered, what would it be? Now, thinking not in terms of where you are, but where people that don't really know God would be, what do you think they might ask of God? Why is there suffering? Yes, that would be big. Anybody else? Do dogs go to heaven? What's that? Is Jesus really God? Right. Yeah. Yeah. Any superficial questions you think might come up? Like I said, do animals go to heaven? And we might kind of laugh at that one, but that's growing so much now. The animal rights are expanding and human rights are dropping. When I was in college, we had a professor say that. And he started illustrating how that's going to be. He said, you're going to see animals having more rights than humans. And he died years ago. But that was 15 years ago or something like that. And everybody in our class laughed when he's talking about it. And we've watched it happen more and more steadily. He saw the writing on the wall of what was going on. So I think you might get questions like that. There's nothing.
It might be good even in this small group setting. There are high schoolers, even higher, even kids at Isaac age. It might be good to have them around.
It could.
Encourage them to answer the question.
Yeah. Yeah, I know my boys would probably have legit questions that can actually start the ball rolling.
Right.
Just depends on the group you got, though, in the room. I mean, maybe some people that would backfire, but I don't know. Sean?
I just had a question about the format. Do you go through all of the questions that are there, or?
It depends on your time frame.
Does it just depend on the time frame and you're just gauging it?
Okay. I think it would vary dramatically based on the personality of the person that's sitting there, people that are sitting there with you, because some of these questions, they might be like, I'm just here because you asked me to be. You know,
it's like the first time you get a group together, sometimes people aren't as apt to talk.
Right.
Discuss, and by about the third, fourth time, they're a little more.
Yes.
So just the dynamic is shifting.
I agree, and I think the first ones are the hardest. Personally, I think the first would be the hardest thing to get things rolling. So you probably want to be real intentional in thinking through, how do I make them feel at home? How can I be a good host? Should I put out donuts? You know, should I do something like that? Should
you asking about next week?
No. No, I'm not bringing any donuts. That's on you, Dan.
What's this going to look like with a group of believers together in a small group setting when we're going through the...
Probably about like this. You know, as far as responses you'll get. I would encourage you when you're teaching your small group to do kind of what I'm doing, which is to say, okay, that's the question you're thinking, that's the response you have, but what about somebody who doesn't know Christ? And you might, this might be an opportunity, like Tavis mentioned, if there is a kid in your group, you know, maybe not have them all in, maybe have one of them come in each time or something and see what kind of off the wall question they give you or response that they give you. Cause that could very easily be the kind, cause they're thinking outside the box. They're not Christianized, you know? And so they might say something. You're like, what in the world is that? And that might be perfect because you're like, oh, that's a curveball. You know, it might be useful. Yeah, Dan.
Even before we go through this whole thing, I'd encourage all of us to think of a guinea pig.
Yeah.
And you may even say that before you teach your small group how to do this, maybe you need to do it with one person that you know that's not a believer, and say to them, hey, help me to understand. How would people respond to this?
Yeah.
And you may even use that as a...
That's good.
...as a catch thing.
That's veteran stuff right there, Dan. Way to go. No, that is a good point, though. Honestly, Dan, that's a good way to say, hey, I'm trying to teach this small group about this evangelistic Bible study, which is where we share with people about God.
And we don't understand people that don't think like this.
I've been inside this bubble too long. I've been in an echo chamber, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, so then just finishing up, page 38 is your follow-up section. You're trying to get them to commit to reading through the Gospel of Mark. homework tells you how interested people are. Right, Mike? Tells you how interested they are in healing. Tells you how interested they are in actually knowing an answer. Homework gives you that response time. So that is a gauge of that. At the same time, I wouldn't expect everybody to thoroughly, deeply answer all this stuff. But these are some questions and stuff that are helping you get them to explore that text. This would be mostly useful, though, in session two. If you flip over to page 41 of your book here, you'll see where it's talking about what to do the next time, and it says this is where that second bullet point, it says ask if they have any questions from last session's follow-up. So that's when you're bringing that in, and that gives you something more to work with, and then you move into your next week. Like I said, this class is a little different. This is just a how-to. Read through this a bit if you get a chance. Watch a video or two if you'd like. Any additional thoughts and things would be great.
If you get a chance.
When you do it. Right, Dan?
Give us a responsibility. If you come back last week and you haven't done it, you have to go out with me. Read it to you.
Dan will read you the section if you didn't do it, right? All right, guys. We'll see you next time.